Welcome to Sketchbook Podcast, a discussion about inspiration and process with artists, creators, and designers. I'm your host, Daniel Montoya Jr. It was Monday, January 21st, 1985. In that special week of January, people in the US were listening to Like a Virgin by Madonna, and in the UK, I Want to Know What Love Is by Foreigner was in the top five hits. The Breakfast Club, Witness, and Heaven Help Us were popular movies of the year. And on the day of the second inauguration of President Ronald Reagan, Richard Kearns was born into this world in Greenville, Texas, the cotton capital of the world. Richard Kearns serves as an assistant director and percussion instructor at Centennial High School in the Burleson Independent School District in Burleson, Texas. He was previously the percussion director of Azle High School in Azle, Texas, where the Azle Drumline and Percussion Section won numerous awards, including Lone Star Classic Champions, NTCA Champions, the 2014 TCGC Percussion Scholastic Open Champions, and were open class semifinalists at the WGI World Championships in Dayton, Ohio. His abilities as a conceptual and visual designer for marching band and indoor drumline has turned out many crowd-pleasing productions, including the 2016 WGI Percussion Independent Open Gold Medalist Vigilantes Indoor Percussion, and the 2017 Percussion Scholastic Open Gold Medalists, and the 2018 and 2019 Percussion Scholastic World 6th Place Finalists, Burleson Centennial High School. Prior to Azle, Richard was the percussion director at Palestine High School, as well as the battery drumline coordinator at Tyler Junior College. Upon joining the Palestine band staff in 2008, the PHS percussion program received numerous awards in the TCGC and NTCA indoor drumline circuits, Lone Star, and Plano drumline competitions. In 2011, the Palestine indoor drumline was the TCGC open class champion, and his instructional contributions for Tyler Junior College helped lead the group to their WGI Percussion Independent Open World Championship in 2008, promotion to WGI World Class, and becoming consecutive finalists at the WGI World Championships. Richard attended Tyler Junior College and was the section leader for the TJC drumline. After attending TJC, Richard continued his studies at Texas State University in San Marcos, Texas, go Bobcats, where his focus was music education. Richard's drum corps performance experience was the Capitol Regiment Drum and Bugle Corps and Magic of Orlando. He later returned to the staff of Capitol Regiment as the snare technician. Richard, may I call you Richard?
Yes.
Speaking to the microphone, Richard.
Oh, so sorry.
Thank you. Yeah. Why do you insist on wanting to make audience members and judges alike cry watching your indoor drumline shows?
Oh my gosh. You know, I love a good story, and I love trying to tell stories, and I love trying to program and see what we can do to captivate throughout the short amount of time that we get to make that emotional connection with the audience. You know, I've seen enough shows that I have kind of the flavor that I like, and then what naturally ends up becoming the next year's show or the next product just tends to usually be on that emotional level. We just try and do it through a different vessel every year.
Vessel?
Oh,
wow. That's like a callback, if you will.
Mm.
It is.
Yeah, it is.
Some people find it hard to make people laugh with shows. I've seen Dartmouth do it a few times, and whoever did the Cats show this year, not the Cats, mm-hmm. the musical, but the right. whole
yeah.
show about
yeah,
Cats.
Yeah.
That was really funny. And you make them cry. Why cry versus laugh, or why cry versus angry?
Well, I've done laugh as well. Mm-hmm. The Palestine High School.
Oh, is it not Palestine?
No, that's the country.
Oh my God. Yeah. You didn't, all this time you didn't correct me.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I didn't want to interrupt.
Send your angry letters to me later.
But the Palestine drumline in 2011, we did a show called Strictly Business that was a lot of fun, and it was all based on a mashup of Office Space and The Office and all of those kinds of things. So we had a lot of humor in that show. We had the I'm gonna need you to come in on Saturday guy and had the boss and, you know, some funny things there. But the emotional connection, I don't know, started you know, probably in Azle with a show called Up in the Air, where it was just a connection to a child living in his imagination, you know, and it was something that we could really embody. And, you know, I think we've all been there and had, you know, our world appear bigger than what it really is when you're just a little kid. And it was just really a lot of fun to do that and a lot of fun to see the different audience reactions, but it was also really fun to have something that you could personally connect with as well.
Now, in your show Strictly Business, did you reference the movie starring Halle Berry and Tommy Davidson?
We did not, no.
Oh, sorry. Well, all right. Well, for fans of those types of movies, we're very disappointed.
Same deal with the Azel Up in the Air show. Had nothing to do with the George Clooney.
Was the even movie out at that point?
It was, yeah.
It was. But nothing. So, okay. Well, copyright free, basically, by not having... Oh, but Office Space. And oh, so you just chose the movies you like. Is that what it is?
Yeah.
You don't like Up in the Air? Is that what you're saying?
No, I mean, what if I told you I've never seen it?
That's a hot take. Richard Kearns has not seen Up in the Air starring George Clooney. I forget her name. Vera Farmiga, I think is her name. Or Academy Award nominee Anna Kendrick of Pitch Perfect fame.
Man, you know it.
I know very little about life, but I know a lot about pop culture. Now, Richard, you have been known to dress up in character, almost as a percussion cosplay, based on some of the shows your groups have performed, most notably as, was it Sheriff Kearns? When the Burleson Centennial, you had the railroad rail tracks?
Now, I can't take any credit for that. So that was 100% our parents. We had the students were prisoners.
Correct.
And so they thought it would be awesome if the parents looked like the security guards and the sheriffs all that stuff. So instead of just doing parent or pit crew helper t-shirts, you know, we went a little bit above and beyond. So they had the full-on sheriff's outfit.
I distinctly remember you walking into critique saying, there's a new sheriff in town.
I did not say that.
You didn't?
There's no way I said that. I probably apologized for my apparel that day.
I thought that might have been the first time I saw you in real life, and I knew at that point that I had to be your friend and that I wanted to interview you for a podcast that didn't even exist in my mind at the time.
Well, I have no shame in wearing things that, you know, especially if it's going to help the culture and the parents get excited about it.
Why didn't you wear anything alien-like this year at WGI for your show, The Vessel? Or was it just Vessel? I don't want to
No, it was called The Vessel.
Okay. Yeah. The was there. Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Yeah. See, well, because we weren't aliens, so maybe we need to watch the show again.
Were you bugs?
We were microorganisms.
There it is.
From here, from Earth, that were
That's right. You've explained this to me.
Yeah, well... Yeah. Maybe I've watched
a lot of shows. Yeah. I'm sorry.
No, it's all good.
This podcast has been off to an awful start. I've mispronounced Palestine. I said they were aliens. You know, it's like the microorganisms on Mars that they found, right?
Yeah. So there's a little bit of
alien-esque. What are your Halloweens like at Kearns Manor if you dress up as a sheriff?
I will what my daughter wants me to be, I will be. Luckily, I've gotten off the hook, you know.
Right.
And, you know, usually I'm dad. So, but I'm down the day that she wants the duo costume. Let's go. We'll do it.
That's going to be great. Yep. Now, Richard, for the folks listening at home, in their cars, in their bathtubs, at the gym, guarding bathrooms for standardized tests, can you describe in excruciating detail what shoes you're wearing?
Let's see. Wearing Under Armour. I do like Under Armour. If you ever want to jump on board with the Burleson Centennial program, we'll
Are y'all sponsored by Under Armour?
No, we're not. I'm just but that'd be a lot of fun.
It would be. Yes. We must protect this house for those that remember Under Armour commercials.
Wearing a multicolored Under Armour I believe the shoe's called the Charger.
Oh.
And it's got some navy blue and then some lighter blue, so that catches the Centennial colors, the Go Spartans.
Go Spartans.
And then we have some fluorescence in there as well, because, no shame.
It's a very aqua-flavored colored shoe, I believe, for those that want to know the details of your shoe. It's a white outsole, white midsole. Yeah. Very, very, very nice. Very
hard to keep clean during marching season.
Sure. If only you knew how to keep shoes clean, Richard.
I have asked you for that advice.
Oh gosh.
I need to do better on following.
You know what you do? This is the second time I've seen you with your shoes, and no, they're not
clean. I think I cleaned them since the last
Did
time.
You?
I don't know, actually.
Well, you probably had marching band rehearsal or a contest or something like that.
The wife gets mad when I come home and I either take over the bathtub or take over the sinks with gotta get the marching band shoes cleaned up.
Does she not understand this world of shoes?
Well, I think you're supposed to clean the dishes before you take them out to start that process, and you know,
right?
We're one of those. You know, our clothes are just constantly in the dryer.
Yeah, I understand.
Turn them on
because you have three in the house.
Three in the house. Four is coming.
Yep. Four is coming. That's awesome. Congratulations on that. Yes. Now, Richard, before we go on, I would be remiss if I didn't ask you the hottest questions in the percussion world. Are you ready for this? Everyone's going to define you as a percussionist first, and then a person second, based on your answers.
I'm ready.
Traditional or match grip?
I'm fine with either. I teach traditional, so I love it, and I think either is fine. I think they both have great educational purposes, and I can understand the need for either one. I love traditional grip, and I think it's an art form over anything else. I agree with people who say that you should play what works for you, but I do think that there's so many things within our activity that are art forms that you want to pay homage to, and so that's why I certainly love it and feel like, you know, I want to make sure it lives on.
Now, have you always taught traditional grip?
I've had one or two match grip lines, but it's definitely, for me also, with how I've written certain battery arrangements, when I've had to do that for a match grip line, it actually has restricted the ideas that I've wanted to do on certain, how things feel or where we're using the different zones on the drum or things like that. The traditional, I guess, just since that's what I grew up playing, you know, it was something that lended itself to different vocabulary.
That is like the most towing the line answer of that question. Some people get so agitated and angry, like, no, traditional grip, how dare you, or match grip, blah blah blah, like, so thank you. Yeah. Well balanced, fair and balanced on this podcast.
Yeah, yeah. I can see both sides
now.
Yeah,
someone should write a song about that. Finale or Sibelius?
Don't care. I am fortunate enough to work with Brian Harmson, who does a lot of all our front ensemble arranging and sound design.
He does.
I'll write the battery stuff and usually go old school hand sketch, there sometimes on a napkin. We'll usually get a little more detailed than that.
Sure.
So, but fortunate enough with Brian that he is the guru and he can type things in way faster than I could ever get them in. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. So we work together and bounce things back and forth.
Not just as a Sibelius master, but he likes hockey jerseys, novelty mm-hmm. hockey jerseys. He turned me on to some of that. It's never cold enough for us to wear that.
The Viz Audio swag.
The Viz Audio swag. Not a sponsor of this podcast, by the way. Just want to mention that out loud. Do you have a favorite stick or mallet?
I am endorsed by Innovative Percussion. I love the family vibe that you get from mm-hmm. Innovative Percussion. Eric Johnson has been a dream since getting to know him. The whole Innovative team, when you call, mm-hmm. You're talking to a friend and a brother, you know?
Yeah.
And that's what I think I love just as much as the product from them. So they take great care of every group I've ever been associated with. I think that, you know, the mallets are as versatile as you could want. Durability, you know, the stick choices too. Like, I don't know what you would want that they don't have at a great level where you're part of such a great family too.
For sure. Have you toured the facility?
I top secretly did one time, yes.
I will not admit to doing it either. Yeah. So, yes, back then Nick was still working the front. Now now Henry's at the front, right?
Henry's there, yeah.
Yeah, yep. That's awesome.
Henry's who gave me I didn't get the tour. So it's
yeah, if you were if to I have gotten to,
Henry,
yeah,
correct, Henry is correct. He's the man.
I made the mistake of hypothetically pulling out my camera and somebody said, yeah, you can't do that. I go, why? Oh, wait, that makes total sense.
Right. Yeah.
And this was before smartphones, so it would have been like a hard copy.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I'm old. Was it before smart? Yeah, definitely before the iPhone, that's for sure. Do you have a favorite symbol?
We are loving what Zildjian has done for us.
They're
so
good
we
company.
Are completely outfit with Zildjian.
Yeah.
As far as if we want to get specifics,
let's do it.
Oh, yeah.
Let's get nerdy.
The Sweet Crash is the K Sweet Crash. It is dark. Uh-huh. It is rich. It is everything I want out of a cymbal.
Wow.
So, yeah. Versatile enough to be a crash ride, too, if you throw it on a drum set.
Seriously.
Yeah, we'll put it in with our wind ensemble as well. Just turn it into, you know, it's our ultimate go-to.
That's fantastic. That's sort of the SD1 general for you?
That'd be probably the IP1. Or
forgive me, or, Eric, yeah. on that one, yeah.
And we'll go with the Chris Lambs as well on that.
Oh, yes. Now, Yamaha, Pearl, or something else?
I love Pearl. Mm-hmm. I actually, you know, when I first started playing drum set, or that was my first drum set, was just
was
the
Pearl.
Super.
Yeah, mine
the,
too.
Yeah, I think it was a purple Pearl Export series.
Mine was red Pearl Export.
Yeah. I wish, yeah. They had Pearl that day, and that's what we got.
That's so, what you got, right?
Yeah. But so no, Pearl, the consistency of the equipment, just mm-hmm. not just now, but through the years, you know, they're just always there, and
right.
it's just great quality.
Now, when describing the stereotypical bass drum tam-tam hit, whether it's in marching band or indoor percussion, do you call it a goosh? Do you call it a boosh? What do you call it?
I like a
Oh.
Yeah. That's not a bass drop, by the way. That's just, you know, if we want to talk about just tuning and resonance. So, yeah, that's pretty good.
That's awesome. Yeah, yeah, that's good. That's good. I would like to mention for the listeners at home that are wondering why it's louder than normal, we are recording in a historic Hampton Inn in Burleson, Texas, in the lobby, the kitchen area, if you will. There's nobody here, but they're cleaning. I was recommended to me by one Richard Kearns, and you know what? I like this establishment. Yep. Thank you for that recommendation.
This was my kitchen for 6 weeks.
This was your kitchen? This was my gosh. Yeah. Can you explain that to the listeners?
Yeah, we had a small flood in our house, and we ended up moving into the Hampton Inn here in Burleson.
Did you get the penthouse?
No, I think maybe just a standard room on the end of the row, overlooking the Chili's and McDonald's.
Oh,
yeah.
Now really, that's high class.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, you got the
sound of the interstate whizzing by is amazing.
I can't imagine a better evening to spend.
Yes. But free breakfast every day.
Free breakfast.
So sometimes we'd have friends over to join us for the breakfast. Omelets were a 10.
Breakfast is on me, right?
Yep.
That's fantastic. Now, when you are picking, do you work with your beginners in the middle that feeds you?
I do, and along with one of our other directors, Andrew Klein, mm-hmm. he also helps team teach with the middle school.
Now, for those that are dealing with beginners or going to at some point or whatever, talk about how you go about picking, interviewing, testing those mm-hmm. that want to play percussion, because as we know, everybody wants to play percussion and then they want to play saxophone and then they just settle for whatever else is left. So how do you do it? Do you use a basketball? Do you use a pizza box? Talk about your process for those that are interested.
The only thing I'm looking for physically is coordination. Like, can we move our hands and our feet in time? So we're going to, in that interview, we're going to kind of build a basic drum set groove from the ground up on our legs with our hands on our legs and just starting with, just 1, 2, 3, 4 on the right, add the foot on one, see how that goes. Sometimes we're done by that point, but right. If we can move our hands and our feet together, then I know that they're wired to be successful. And then everything else we can teach them. I mean, once we get to that point, also we'll do a few other things. I'll clap rhythms and make sure they can do that, hum pitches, or go to a marimba and play a pitch and make sure that they can sing that back and understand that. But as far as actually needing to see them hold sticks or anything like that, we're going to teach them all that. But the biggest thing beyond that is the personal vibe I get from the student, and then also just certain questions that I want to know. Have you had brothers and sisters in band before? If it's a yes, are they still in band?
right.
That's important. Yeah. Oh no, well they were, but then oh okay, well let's figure out what happened here. You can also tell. Just kind of are the parents going to be ultimately really supportive? Are they going to be a band family that we're going to be able to work with really well for the things that we're wanting to do?
Mm-hmm.
So now, those are.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say those are just as equally as important to me as the coordination for the student.
So let's talk a little bit about the nuts and bolts of your process of designing an indoor drumline show. Not so much about what is in the ether that inspires you yet. What actual tools do you use when you're designing? If you're like, all right, let's talk about this process. Is it pen and paper, iPad? Is it a Minority Report, touch screen kind of thing? Like what tools do you use when you design?
I'm first off very fortunate with the people I work with, and it starts with my mom. Actually, has been a huge creative influence in my life. She is one of the most creative people I've ever met, and anybody who ever meets her will probably second that. And she has been a huge help in not only how I was raised and the things that I was exposed to I guess make me feel like I could be an out of the box thinker, mm-hmm. Be able to see enough theatrical productions and things that are really high level and things really well produced that that could create a good vehicle for me. But she's someone who I bounce ideas off immediately as soon as they start, coming into my head. And then, she introduced me, and I'm sure everybody knows about it now, but a while back to Pinterest. Okay. So we actually get kind of in, instead of just like a normal Google Doc or Dropbox thing going, we actually just start with Pinterest boards and just literally start in with whatever the ideas are and things that we're looking for with the look of the show.
Mm-hmm.
And then, the coolest thing is then you get that that recommended search. You know, you pick one picture and you open it up, and then it starts showing you similar things. Mm-hmm. And then it just, you just get the ball rolling. You know, it's an infinite amount of ideas that can be at your fingertips really quickly. And then we're able to have all those ideas in one place. We can invite the other design team members into that. Mm-hmm. We can send that to our uniform designer also, and highlight up certain of those things, certain pieces of that Pinterest board. We could also separate out into something else if we want to get more specific. So,
wow,
that's kind of where that's really where it starts,
mm-hmm,
you know,
mm-hmm.
for us. Yeah,
and then how do you lay out and prepare your designs? Is it do you write like text, like prose? Are there sketches in addition to Pinterest? I assume there's like playlists, whether it's original or not original. Like what else?
Yeah, a lot of times. Before even trying to figure out minute by minute of what the show is going to be paced out to, we try and find, if we're not using a certain piece as source music, then mm-hmm. we're at least trying to find other music inspiration of what we think we want each movement to sound like. And then we can kind of piece that together into, you know, movement one is going to feel like this, movement two is going to feel like that, and work our way through the show. Then we're able to start to divvy up how much time we want to spend on each one of those to get the idea across that's necessary.
At the world-class level, how long are the shows typically?
You have an eight-minute.
Now, if those who hadn't seen your show, The Vessel, this year, it was an awesome stage of a ramps on one side to the other, but then the pit was surrounded in a cove of sorts, which mm-hmm. was in itself like another ramp. There are tons of ramps, and then there's probably on the back, because we saw the percussionists come up on the back. So. Mm-hmm. Who designs that? Is it something you drew on a napkin? Like, I want to do this, or what?
I drew it. I then went to Hobby Lobby and got balsa wood and started carving out balsa wood to make a prototype of that. Super low budget,
right.
Not maxed out, but it was at least a balsa wood prototype that I could present to our prop parents mm-hmm. and say, we're going to figure out the logistics of this, but this is what I want. And the really funny thing about it is I maybe spent 10 minutes on that prototype.
Uh-huh.
And then once the ramps were built, how similar it actually looked. I mean, they nailed it. It looked exactly like what that prototype was.
Wow. Are you a fan of The Simpsons, Richard?
It's been a while since I've been up to date on The Simpsons.
Remember the episode where he designed a car? Homer did?
Definitely not.
No, he drew a car and they like made it in real life and it was awful. I'm not saying your prop was awful. I'm just saying you and Homer Simpson are very similar in your design process, I believe.
Thank you.
You're welcome. That's a compliment.
And our love for donuts.
And your
or just breakfast food in general.
What's your favorite donut?
Chocolate Eclair.
Chocolate Eclair. Do you have a favorite donut shop?
There's one across from the school.
Uh-huh. You can give a shout out.
It's just called Donut.
Donut.
The words are, the letters are in rainbow color and it just says Donut.
Donut.
That's what you get.
They're just telling it like it is.
But they're good. I'm not a fan of the Krispy Kreme or the, I know. Just
only the hottest of takes on this podcast.
Yeah, I know. But,
no Krispy Kreme,
no
Richard.
Krispy Kreme, you know, like Dunkin', I like the mom and pop shop.
Yeah.
You know?
Now speaking of mom and pops, and I'm from Austin, but I live mm-hmm. Around the Austin area too. Have you tried Round Rock Donuts?
I've heard, and I never have.
That's a mom and pop, and I fought it for a long time because I was like, it can't possibly be this good.
Yeah,
it's good.
Yeah,
you need to try.
Yeah, I have heard.
Next time you come down to Austin for whatever reason, maybe mm-hmm. to hang out with your boy or visit the homeland of Chewy's, your favorite Tex-Mex restaurant.
It's. I never said it was my favorite, but I don't consider it the Applebee's of Tex-Mex, which is
I'll say it right now.
Yeah.
Chewy's is the Applebee's of Tex-Mex.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, unbelievable. I'm sorry. Yeah.
You know, there are days where Applebee's it's what it is. And
Applebee's is open late, and sometimes they have like a dollar adult beverage cost.
Nice. Well, I think they do the half price appetizers too late night. So yeah.
Yeah, I have in small towns, sometimes Applebee's is the Chili's, and you need to go there. So I've enjoyed
it. You usually regret it after, but it's... Sometimes that's what you got.
My dad, when he was alive, we would go visit him in El Paso, Texas, which has got great Mexican food, Southwest Mexican food. And we'd go, my brother and I would go up there and go, Dad, where do we want to go eat? Expecting him to like take us to some fantastic Tex-Mex or whatever. He goes, I want to go to Applebee's. And my brother and I always just, because he's tired of Mexican food, right? He's like, I want to go have a burger or something. And we're just rolling our eyes like, we've got to go to Applebee's. No offense to Applebee's. If they want to sponsor this, go for it. But that's what I think. I think about my dad.
Made it into Talladega Nights, you know?
Well,
I think he did mean to put the onions on my steak.
Have you ever been kicked out of an Applebee's, Richard?
Definitely not.
Nope. What's your favorite breakfast food? You said you like breakfast
food. I do like breakfast food. You know, here's a good topic to discuss.
Let's go.
Whataburger breakfast.
Oh, my. Have you tried the breakfast burger?
I haven't. Nope, I haven't. I will eventually.
I have tried it twice. First time I got it as is, and I was wondering, this tastes peculiar. Second time I got it without the creamy jalapeno sauce. I like it better without the sauce. That's just me, but whatever. Breakfast burger, you should try it. So anyway, continue.
Obviously the honey butter chicken biscuit, you can't.
Classic.
It's undeniable.
Yeah.
Now, I love the breakfast taquitos, especially late at night.
Yep, that's what I hear.
Those are awesome.
That's what I hear.
So that is amazing. Also, their hash browns.
I love those hash browns.
If you ever want to try this, it's good. You're gonna be out for the rest of the day. But get the biscuits and gravy, and then put the hash brown sticks in the gravy. You're done. But it's amazing.
You're done.
Now here's another issue
pro tip.
Now because Whataburger, I think the breakfast is hands down. It's my go-to.
Mm-hmm.
But their coffee. Have you had Whataburger
coffee? No, I rarely get coffee from those types, like Whataburger, McDonald's.
McDonald's coffee.
Is it really?
Oh, man.
Do you get it black?
When I add a few little things.
Something. Yeah.
Just a little bit of cream, a little equal. But the Whataburger coffee, I mean, it just sadly.
Does it taste like burnt or what?
Yeah. I don't know. Like, what's the mop water in the back, you know, that's in the yellow bucket?
Gosh.
Yeah, I think that's what's going into it. But
those are some strong words.
Well, right? I'm still faithful to Whataburger.
Yes.
But, you know.
I do like their iced tea. Do you
I love their tea.
I get
their
half tea. And half. Yeah. I can't handle pure sugar anymore because I turned old.
Yeah. Wow. No, I love their sweet tea. It's amazing. They're sweet, and I'm with you, half and half.
Now, you recommended a place here in Burleson called Our Place.
Our Place.
We visited together a few weeks ago in Mansfield after some miscommunication on my part, and then today I had it without you. Do you have a favorite dish from Our Place?
You know, what's funny is I don't really go to Our Place that often. I know. I'm usually...
I would go there every day if
I'm usually at Whataburger or Donut.
There you go. Forgive me, Donut.
Our Place is a splurge. You got to plan that.
It was pretty packed today. Apparently kids aren't in
school. It's very popular. Yep.
We're recording this on a Friday, October 11th. It seems like kids all over the state are off.
Off today.
Here. Staff development, right?
Yes.
I think in Austin area, they're off. And then Monday for whatever you decide to celebrate on Monday, because it's a big topic of discussion.
Mm.
Formerly Columbus Day. I'm not sure what they call it now. Cool. That was a good discussion about food.
Yep.
Yeah, the Couchman people really like that. Now, for the million peso question, this is what everyone wants to know. Everyone's waiting for this one. How do you come up with your show concept ideas for Centennial High School? I know you mentioned your mom, but something has to be like, you know, and you're like, I want to do this.
You know, what's funny is I actually do get asked that quite often, and I don't have as deep of a process maybe, other than that when it's time to put myself in the think tank, you know, I can focus pretty quickly and usually find an idea that I feel really happy with. And it's funny where that inspiration comes from. You know, I've heard different designers talk about that, of what, where they go to get different inspiration. It's totally different places for me and in totally different ways. You know, the Centennial shows and the identity that we've had the last few years has been a lot based on, Sam Robson has been the vocalist that we've used within the shows, who does all the amazing YouTube videos and all his multi-layered harmonies and everything. Those have been different. When we were putting together the show, The Harvest, which was...
And that's the show you won Open Class, correct?
Correct. Yeah, in 2017. Brian Harmson and myself had wanted to do kind of a metaphor show where you felt like you were looking at something, but there was a way deeper meaning and understanding behind it, which that show was just a metaphor that to the wheat that was in this field, that was all that they could know. But obviously, we know there's way more than that. There's this whole world that we live in.
Yeah.
You know, and so the same thing of, we as people feel that there's more beyond this, but we are not made to be able to see it, or not made to really be able to understand it. It's the same thing of, it's wheat. I mean, you can't understand anything.
Sure.
But it's like, to us, there's barriers with us that we know there's more, but we can't put our finger on what.
Sure. And do you remember the next show, which was the prisoner show?
That was the Salvation.
What sparked that idea?
We started with a piece called Shady Grove that was kind of a bluegrass Appalachian guitar feel that we ended up using in the show. If you go back and check it out, it was kind of our part two. It was actually the live recording of this guitar player playing this piece, Shady Grove. And then we spliced it up into, I think it was 137 separate samples
now,
to be able to play
it. Did you do that or did
Brian? That was, come on. Come on. I'm lucky if I can charge my phone properly. So no, Brian was 100% the man on that. So, and the student we had who had to play that, man, she just knocked it out of the park.
Sure.
The different things she had to do. I mean, on an 88 controller to play 137 samples, she had to go all the way up the keyboard chromatically with this live recording. It's not perfect.
Right, yeah.
And then switch to a different patch to then start over down at the bottom of the keyboard and go back up. So we have
I'm going to come back to that in a second about the triggering person, but continue on that.
Where were we?
You were saying the inspiration.
Yes. So it just had this really cool Appalachian backwoods feel that reminded me immediately of Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, where they're hanging out in the woods. And it's like, you know, there's so many funny quirks with that movie, but there's also this bond and this brotherhood that these guys go through of breaking free. And so that's where we went away from more Oh Brother, Where Art Thou and went more towards this kind of... you know, these guys go through so much and then they break free. And now that all they have is each other to rely on. And then, you know, the running is only going to get them so far. And then eventually, you know, they've got to find something even deeper than that. So that was another part of the inspiration that was from that movie with the Down to the River to Pray scene.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so that's kind of where we got some of the more spiritual elements to put into that. We knew we wanted to use that piece of music and it just worked out. The year before was when we started the kind of collaboration with Sam Robson on the I Need Thee Every Hour. And then we had already decided to use Down to River to Pray. And then we found a version that he'd already done. It just happened to work out that way.
It's so kismet,
we did actually have him re-record it for the show. That was awesome. And that's really when we started to get more of a personal working relationship with him of having him do custom arrangements for us.
So. And so the next show this past year was The Vessel, and he has a recording of the Corinthian song, right? Now, what came first, chicken egg? Explain that one.
We knew, again, what we wanted to do, had this idea of... It started with just wanting to mainly transform a set and go through. There's been shows about, you know, morphing or and evolutions and all those kinds of things happening. But I don't know. There hadn't been one that had done enough for me, you know.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to completely transform a world in front of the audience as much as we could.
Sure.
And so that's kind of where that started. So we knew what the vessel was going to be, was that we were going to, you know, try and, you know, make the next home for humanity. You know, how are we going to do that with the way that we've been doing things of connecting the audience emotionally and spiritually and not just make it another sci-fi show?
And, correct. Yeah.
You know, hopefully make people not think that we're aliens.
Well, not everyone's as smart as I am, apparently. So.
So, what was funny was we were kind of full on think tank mode on that. And I said, you know what, we've had this great relationship with using these Sam Robson songs and what that's done for us and the audience being able to connect with it. So I just went on his YouTube channel and I said, I'm just going to start cruising through and listening to certain pieces and just make sure that there's not something else out there that we should do instead of this show.
Wow.
And when I did that, I found his take on Corinthian song.
Yeah.
And I said, that's it. Like, that is perfect for this. It was one of the first ones I listened to. And I said, that's it. I mean, you know, the lyrics to the song told our story. We didn't need narration anymore. It was really a funny part of the season was, how much narration we wrote out and recorded and put in
really,
and then kept pulling it out, you know, and just started and just kept just focusing on the lyrics.
Right.
You know?
That's fantastic. Yeah. Now, has Sam seen your stuff?
We do send him videos. Yeah. Of usually the final product.
Yeah.
You know, usually local championship parent bootleg videos because we can't get
final
product you know,
no one would record those illegally or share them online.
Right.
I want to bring it back to the trigger person. And for those who are kind of unclear on what we're talking about, Richard mentioned how you can't just play a song live. You can't just push play and play along it with a loop or anything like that. And with words, you have to trigger each word or each syllable. What's the rule now?
You can do word now.
Word.
Mm-hmm.
So
word.
You have to... Word, yo. So you have to splice up a song, and then you put each word to a different note, and you play that. Now, there was discussion years ago, and there always seems to be a discussion about how musical or what kind of musician is that type of person that, quote-unquote, just... trigger sounds, trigger samples, et cetera, et cetera. Electronics are so extremely important now in pageantry, nowhere more than indoor percussion, I believe. That's, can you just, I don't want to say get on your soapbox and talk about how important that is, but it's not like you just point at some kid and go, push this here. There's way right. more to it than just that.
Yeah, and this kind of, I'm kind of in the match grip, traditional grip boat on this because I've been a part of those discussions with the WGI advisory board.
Uh-huh.
It's a hot topic every single year.
Every year.
It gets presented again, you know?
Yeah.
And you think it's going to pass to something different, and then all of a sudden people start speaking up on different points, and it's like, whoa, that's a great point.
Correct.
You know? I think the validation of the point that has made it to where it stands the way it is today still is that, you know, the day we lose the connection that we're making a performance live mm-hmm. is the day that we really stop performing,
sure,
you know, and
sure.
we start, you know, it's not just about the ease of what it is for the performers or for the group to be able to do. But it's also about how somebody's going to take it too far. Somebody's going to start to use it to their advantage in a way that's not fair, and you can't monitor it. Now, that's another argument that's been made, though, is you can't monitor it right
Hard.
Now.
Yeah.
So you're relying on the integrity of the group,
mm-hmm.
you know, that they're going to honestly do this the way that they're supposed to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's been an interesting topic. As far as the performers themselves, you know, we've been lucky that we've had great, you know, piano players within our group that have been our synth button pushers for the vocals mm-hmm, and things like mm-hmm. that. And it's difficult. It's
yeah.
very difficult. And it's really cool to hear other instructors talk about how when they know that you're doing that and they know that you're doing it at that demanding of a level, mm-hmm. how much they all of a sudden start zoning in on that synth player and
yeah.
watching them
yeah.
and appreciating them like they are a musician, because they are.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
know? And so I think it is cool that it has gained to a point where people are watching it and are respecting mm-hmm. That what those students are doing. There is an argument that I do also understand of, but are we training them with a skill set mm-hmm. that exists beyond this indoor percussion world or this marching
sure.
pageantry activity,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
you know? And that's a great point, you know, is I've watched our students be more excited to play piano style parts than when all of a sudden, okay, now we're doing vocals.
Right.
You know?
Sure.
And
uh-huh.
it's just as tricky, and they know it's just as big a part of the show, but it's not something that they get as excited about. So.
Sure. And again, we can understand the difference between playing, like if anybody saw Monarch's show this year, they ended with this thrillingly fantastic piano feature. The guy was just incredible.
Mm-hmm.
There's a difference between playing that and I imagine like triggering words, but in a lot of ways, when you're triggering the singing or something, you're creating general effect in a way that the whole audience and judges are just like, oh, that's so incredible the way it matches up and it works. And so there's a huge juxtaposition of, oh, I'm only pushing chromatic notes, but we're scoring all the points, versus, oh, I'm playing like a Rachmaninoff piano thing, and everyone's like, oh, that's cool.
Sure.
It's an interesting topic that will probably never go away. And the further advanced we get with the technology, the discussion's yep. only going to heat up.
Yep, and like I said, I'm actually on both sides.
Yeah,
you know? I
yeah.
mean, it's I have heard the arguments made by some of the most people I have the most respect for in the activity,
mm-hmm.
and I agree with all of them. You know, there's no
yeah.
there's no perfect solution to
no,
it.
No,
but I will say that the activity is in a good spot.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like, you know, we're
mm-hmm.
certainly not losing anything, I feel like, by keeping things the same.
Right, and that's a perfect segue. So far, all my guests have been very good at reading my mind as to where I'm going to go next. I'm not the first, won't be the last, and maybe this would, I don't want to say offend some people, but WGI percussion is really where innovation is taking place in pageantry. Would you agree with that?
I do. I think that all you have to do is sit in person on Saturday night at
mm-hmm.
UD Arena and take in world-class finals, and you will see the collective creativity and, you know, just what happens when you get the best designers with the best players and in that environment too. You know, there's things that you can do in a smaller room
mm-hmm.
Versus what you can pull off from sitting up in a press box, you know? And so getting to see that, especially on that weekend,
mm-hmm.
just nonstop. And it doesn't start at the world-class level. It's
I was going to say, you can watch A-class finals
yep.
and there are some groups you're just like, oh my God. And you're playing quote unquote basic skills, which that's a whole nother discussion. But what they're doing on an A-class level is on another level as well.
Exactly. It's something that I've forced us to put in our schedule every year that, since we've gone to Dayton, is we go to A-class finals.
That's great.
Every single year.
Mm-hmm.
And when the students watch that, they're blown away.
Mm-hmm.
And they're blown away at the creativity and the professionalism of the productions and the groups, but even just where the groups are at and how they play and how smart their choices are.
Yeah. I'm going to bastardize the quote or paraphrase it, but there's someone much smarter than me said something about true creativity comes from limitations, right? And you're saying you have a basketball court, basically, and you have 6 to 8 minutes, and you have this and this and this, and so you're forcing very smart people to make very smart decisions on music, on visual, on sound, and it truly left me, and it sounds so cliche, I left WGI this year so inspired. I don't even write indoor drumline shows, but I took that inspiration to my marching band shows, to my concert music, to any of that kind of stuff, because you're surrounded by greatness, by so many people who have won things, even the groups that don't win. You're just like, wow, that's incredible, or that's a big risk. Good for you for taking it. Don't necessarily like it, but it's just, it's an incredible arena. It's an incredible thing that we do. And it, you know, I love marching band. I love drum corps. And I've watched them all live. But there's just something about what takes place in indoor drumline, you know, around the country that just, I take and I steal, and we all want to use it in marching band and drum corps. It's just, that's where stuff's happening right now.
Yeah. And I like the direction of the activity too. I think it's maybe in the healthiest spot that it's been on a musicality standpoint and mm-hmm. maturity of creating art on a floor versus playing rim shots and flam drags and the things that are cliche of what we're going to do with the drum line. So it just seems like it's gone through such an evolution. I feel like the activity really changed there's just a huge shift between 2007 and 2008.
Mm-hmm.
And then you see the effects of it in 2009,
right?
Between what was happening at the world-class level and where shows were, to where they all of a sudden were 3 years later.
Mm-hmm.
It's just turned into this ultimate level of sophistication. But WGI, I think, did go through a weird period in, I don't know, it just seemed like WGI percussion in 12 through 14 ish. It just seemed like it was like, well, what are we going to do next? Like, what are we going to try?
Yeah.
You know, and it just seemed like, and you just see people try things, and it was cool. Like you said, sometimes it would work and sometimes wouldn't. And you just see ideas that were, like, okay, I guess that's what it's going to take, you know, to get noticed.
Right.
You know? And it seems like it's now, I just think it's shifting towards sophistication,
yes.
musicality, nuance,
uh-huh.
and creating musical art versus always focused on other things. But the demand is there, you know? I mean,
yeah.
it's insane.
Oh my gosh.
The demand is there, you know?
Jeez, yeah, so. For sure. Now, you're not only a designer and a teacher, I'm sure you're a fan. Did you have any chance to watch anything this year? And what were some of your favorites that might stuck out in your mind?
Yeah, this year, you know, I'm going to start back with United Percussion.
Yes.
They did the I don't remember the name of the show, but it was about Beethoven and losing
yes.
his hearing.
Yes, uh-huh. The giant pipes, right?
Right,
I don't know if they're pipes, but that's the only word that's popping in my
head.
Cylinders.
Right, and that show, starting back at that level, that was one of the first ones I got in to see, and it was the ultimate display of, here we go. This is Saturday night. Like, this is what it takes at this level, you know? And the ideas of what they did to portray losing his hearing.
Mm-hmm.
They had, you know, just constant different ways to pull sound out. They had a visual performer with these different foam pads of some sort who started going around. There's a tenor feature on the floor, and she starts all of a sudden, she's dancing around and then just like starts placing these pads on drum 4 and then drum 3 and drum 2. And next thing you know, they're going from like super bright sounds to like muddled, and you can hardly hear it at all.
Yeah.
And then they ended up doing the same thing throughout the rest of the battery.
That was an incredible moment.
By the end of the show, they're all playing on these foam pads, and then they're just, next thing you know, they're just air sticking for the last 15 seconds of the show.
Yeah.
But they're still flying around the floor, and then they're hyping it, like their facial expressions are as if they're playing the loudest, most obnoxious stuff you've ever heard.
Yeah.
And the room is silent.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like the payoff was there. I don't care what they placed. I don't know what they placed. There may have been things about that show that weren't great, but I remember that the payoff had to be worth it for them, just to hear that room be that silent on Saturday night. And everybody's just captivated by that. Just a great idea.
Yeah, so, totally. Yeah.
Obviously, the you know, the top groups, Broken City, that was pure art.
It was the most musical book I've ever heard an indoor drumline perform. It was amazing.
Yeah, it was just, like I said, you just felt like you were, I definitely didn't feel like I was watching a drumline show. Mm-hmm. The demand was certainly, you know, right there with some of the best I've ever seen. And then you had, I thought the Risk, with what Music City Mystique was doing also.
Sure. Oh my gosh.
That was incredible. So those were some that really stood out to me from this year.
You mentioned your mother, but what other things out there inspire you?
I think I get the most inspired when I can find time to be still. Like, and maybe one of the first times I've ever had to say that, or I've really ever said that, is that, you know, it's part of kind of where I'm at in my life of trying to find calmness when I can find it, you know, and the chance to sit with my daughter on the couch and there's nothing else going on and to just, you know, put my chin on top of her head and just, you know, take in what happened that day. That's the best part of anything, you know, and when I think I can be still, then there can be either new ideas that can flow in, you know, or there can just be a rejuvenation for, you know, whatever's next.
Did we hear the title of the 2020 Burleson Centennial Show here? Rejuvenation?
No.
Oh, well, that would have been a super hot take. What is your most prized material possession?
Whoa.
I have to specify material because not everyone would say their family. And
man, you're going to cut out all this silence while I think about that.
Yeah, for sure.
Material possession.
I'll make you sound smart.
Oh, yeah. Definitely my wedding ring. My wedding ring belonged to my grandfather.
Oh, cool.
His name was Sam Lauderdale. It was the biggest inspiration of my life. Such a humble and passionate person. And then my grandmother gave it to me, and I was fortunate enough, like he, with everything he did for me in my life growing up and how I still try and, you know, live to his honor every day. It means so much to me to have this ring. Our daughter's name is Sam. She's named after him. My middle name is Sam, you know, so I've got just some history here and just a reminder when I look down at my left hand that, you know, of all the good that he brought into the world. He was just an ultimate giver of love and of community service and of, just I knew how to balance work with family, you know? So this, awesome. So this is just the constant reminder. Like I said, every time I look down.
What can't you live without?
Queso.
Where's your favorite queso from?
Yeah.
Oh God. Oh, yeah. Here we go.
Have you had Matt's from Matt's Rancho Martinez? I know they have it in Austin.
Matt's El Rancho.
Matt's El Rancho. Yeah, they have it. Yeah, now they call it a different thing up here in DFW. They have what's it's called Matt's. What do they just call it? Just
Matt.
Yeah, it's just called Matt's.
Really? I grew up Matt's down south, so I kind of remember that place.
So they have the Bob Armstrong dip. That's pretty solid. Now the Bob Armstrong dip is just really, if you go to most places, it's like a queso supreme. It's going to have your ground beef and your sour cream and your guacamole. If it's true and it's really good, it doesn't need all of that.
Correct.
And that queso is the same way. You can have the Bob Armstrong dip, and it's great if you want all those things in it. But if you get that queso by itself, it's hard to close your mouth from smiling to finish the bite.
These are some strong words.
Yep. Now, did you know Chewy's, though, does give free queso on weekdays from 4 to 7?
You know, I don't know any of that about Chewy's.
I just want to make sure you
know. I will, in the spirit of full disclosure, I've gone to Chewy's before, and I will go with people, and mainly to drink water and iced tea. But I know what I'm going to get when I go there, so it's like I don't have high expectations.
Right.
I've probably offended most of my audience. If you would like to put anybody on blast, where's the worst queso you've ever gotten?
Oh my gosh!
Or maybe it's one of those like you're like, why does everybody like this? This isn't good.
Yeah, there's a place here in town, and I don't want to say it, but there is a place here in town that's pretty popular in Burleson that everybody talks about it, and I'm not
a fan.
Nope.
Would you call it the Applebee's of queso? Is that?
Yeah, I don't know. We're back to the Whataburger mop water thing. So.
I don't drink beer. I'm not one of those that's like, I don't drink alcohol. I just don't like beer. Mm-hmm. And so whenever you say mop water, that's what I think. It's just beer just tastes awful to me. Ever since my dad gave me a sip when I was a little kid, like I think like maybe most parents do. And I think he did it on purpose because I've hated it ever since.
It worked.
It did work. When did you realize that you were good or knew what you were doing?
That's a hard question because I still feel like I'm learning every day and I'm not just trying to be chill or whatever and say that. But I mean, but seriously, I'm constantly trying to learn, and I'm also constantly a fan. I think that's really important too. Not just trying to steal tricks, but I really genuinely love watching, you know, the indoor percussion activity and just in general pageantry, you know. But as far as being good, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think there was some exciting validation at the start of my teaching career with the Palestine
indoor drumline.
This was a really fun experience that I cherish every day that I get to teach, because that's where I started teaming up with the head director that I still work with, Sean Murphy. He was the head band director at Palestine High School. And we had freedom in this small little school in East Texas to do whatever we wanted. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I got to make a lot of the first year teacher mistakes, in a place where, you know, I had a supportive band director, and he was excited to watch me kind of form a niche and be able to do whatever we thought was best to get the kids really excited about percussion, and just build the program. It happened faster than I thought, because like I said, we got those mistakes out of the way pretty quick. Mm-hmm. And then started just doing indoor, because again, the kids, they just loved it. You know, they would see, the Tyler Junior College drumline was, competing in WGI regularly at that time. They would go watch them. They'd come to rehearsals when I'd be there. And I could tell that they wanted to do that. So when we started doing that, it seemed like it was, like I said, the kids were very, very excited about the activity. And then we jumped into the game, and it was, it just seemed like we were right there with some really big schools really quickly. And I think that's when I learned that, you know, especially in the smaller environment, size is not where it's at. You know, it's design, and it's good, individual quality from your students. You know, you look at the size of percussion groups, and even at the top at world class, I mean, you know, it's not like some of the big, you know, BOA Grand National drum lines where you're going to have seven or eight snares or more. Yeah, you know, it's about quality and design. So that was a really fun experience, like I said, because we were able to make mistakes, we were able to try new things, and we were able to do it in a place where you could see really fast results. I think that was important too, because they didn't have a lot going on before then. Mm-hmm. And so the results that you'd see, you know, it's just really could happen very fast.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. How hard is it to win?
Oh my gosh.
and that is not a subjective question. Objectively, you were named a champion of open class, and you've won the local circuits numerous times.
I hope I can get to the points that I want to that I would say about this. I would start with the fact that, you know, we try and talk to our students about that competition is not what it's all about, and that trophies are not what it's all about, and it's not. But it is undeniable that the competitive process makes our product better. If people are crying in our shows, and that's what we get known for, you know, a lot of that is getting to that level because of what we're trying to do competitively. It makes the show better. It makes me better. It makes the students better. It gives us something to strive for. So that's really important. I think that that it's not all about this, but it makes the product better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, on top of that, I think as far as winning goes, one, you got to have lightning in a bottle. You know, you either got to have the right show at the right time, or you have to have such a established culture that's been going on for that to be able to happen. You know, so it was really a funny story. We got back from WGI this year, and I went to church with my wife's family, and I had this little old lady come up to me, and I don't get to go to church very often in indoor season. Maybe that's why we put some, you know, spiritual elements into
our
shows,
because
we get church at rehearsal, right? So,
yeah.
But so I don't get to go to church very often on Sundays after indoor competitions. So we go to church, and this little old lady who's so sweet, Donna, she comes up to me, and she said, Richard, I haven't seen you in a long time. And I said, well, we've been doing the drumline thing. She goes, that's right. She goes, well, how'd you do this year? I said, well, we got sixth. She goes, sixth? She says, sixth what? I said, sixth in the world. And she goes, sixth in the world? And while she seems so amazing, she just immediately flips a switch and she goes, well, did you learn anything? And I just chuckled, and I just snapped back right there and I said, yep, I learned exactly how good the top five are. And that was the truest words I could have said at that point. It was, I just learned how good world-class is. I mean, and that's why it's called world-class. We're right there with programs that we just have the most respect for, you know, that is fun to compete with, just to look at those names and, for the students to know that groups that they're watching videos of on their off days and with the things that have inspired them to want to play as well, that they're going on after them or before them or whatever, or they're coming up the tunnel and that group is helping grab their marimba and pull it up the tunnel. You know, it's pretty awesome.
Yeah. I think we had talked about that. How long has that top five in world class been the top five? Some time, right?
Yeah.
It's the same top five.
Mm-hmm.
So you're right there. And I'm sure your kids, whether they know it or not, those videos of your kids are being shown to drum lines across the world and going like, we want to be like this. Like, this is the type of show, like your kids, your designs, y'all are inspiring people the way that maybe Ayala's inspired you or Dartmouth has inspired other groups. So that's a huge deal. I hope your kids understand that.
It's exciting, but it's also it's a tough balance too, because we haven't been doing it as long, you know.
Sure.
So I guess, you know, it's something that I have realized is that, you know, when you get some success pretty quickly, and you haven't had the years of infrastructure to do that, that is really hard to continue to sustain that, you know. And it's something that we're honest with the group about too, is like, you know, there's going to be years that right now we've had a trending success of every year has been as a little bit better than the year before. I mean, the group last year was achieving at a much higher level than the group before, and I thought, you know, that's why I said the top five were, oh my gosh, I learned how good they are, because I felt like we came out swinging with, you know, everything we could, you know, and six was where we ended up and we were proud to do it, you know. But I mean, inevitably with anything, you know, there's going to be a day where things aren't as good as they were the day before.
Sure.
You know, and I guess, you know, we want to do everything we can to push that off as long as we can. But when we're there, can we accept it? And can we still feel proud of what's next?
Yeah. How does it feel as a designer, as a teacher, for you, or maybe the kids have talked about it, the parents, other directors, when you hear Joe Allison or Mike McIntosh crying on their judges' tapes?
Yeah, that's some pretty awesome validation of what you've done, just for just the whole group. You know, when we have tapes like that, I share them with the kids. You know, if I usually kind of go through at the end of the season and collect some of the best tapes that we've had and share them sometimes right after a show, you know, especially if it's an earlier season and we're already kind of getting some sniffles, or but more importantly, just if we're getting goosebumps for people and people are just really liking what we're doing, you know, that helps the kids feel really good about it. So, but Joe and Mike, though, just in general, those guys, man, what a gift they are to the judging community. Like when Mike McIntosh came back into the judges' seat, like just the immediate, like, emotional connection that you knew you were having from that person on the other end of the of the tape recorder, that was really awesome. Joe Allison, my gosh, you know, every anytime I see him on a panel, if I know there's going to be a critique, I am so, I'm so excited, you know, just because of, you know, he just knows how to speak to a group to make them better, but to make them feel, like they're doing the right thing. And I've worked with other groups that have judged him, not just Centennial, and I've listened to those tapes, and there's been tapes where he's been very honest and, as harsh as you could imagine him being, but it's still delivered in such a way that it's helpful, and it's dad putting the arm on the shoulder and saying like, we can do this, we can do better.
Right. You know? And it's hard. And I judge, and you probably judge off and on whatever free weekends you have. You know, it is competitive, but at the end of the day, you still have to remember to be positive and encouraging, because for not every group has maybe some of the luxuries that other groups have. Maybe it's their first year. Maybe it's the one band director doing them. And we have to remember as adjudicators, and I have to remind myself every time I get in front that, you know, it can't just be negative, negative, negative. We have to encourage and promote and be positive, because we may be the only other voices that these students hear. That's important for us. If not band, what else would you be doing?
Not that I could make a career out of it. I love golf. Growing up, that was my big other passion, my other thing. You know, in high school, it was either I was in the band hall or I was on the golf course, you know.
Right.
And I actually kind of even burned out on golf out of high school. I played competitively and burned out pretty fast, actually, and then got away from it for a while and then got back into it after I just stayed away from playing for a few years and just realized, like, man, this is like, when I talked about like learning to be still, like, man, that's it. When I'm just, you know, I don't have to be playing with four or five other people. If I can just be out there, you know, and it's just a beautiful day and I can just stop for a second and just take in nature, but, you know, try to keep my ball in the fairway,
right?
You know, then that's a good day.
Do you try to go hustle some nerds at Top Golf?
No, we do go to, we have some band get-togethers at Top Golf. That's our, that's a good meeting spot for us.
Right. You mentioned your mother, and you can mention her again. Who are some of your heroes and inspirations?
Yes, her, my grandfather also, who, like I said, I get to wear his wedding ring every day. I guess professionally, Tom McGowan was the mentor for me. He was the teacher. He's the percussion director at Tyler Junior College, and he was the person, you know, who, there's always that one person that you, if you're a teacher, that, you know, that's when you wanted to teach, was you saw how they did it, you know, and he was that person for me. I was very, very fortunate to get to be a student of his, then get to work alongside him, and then just to have such a great friendly relationship with him. We were, he's a groomsman in my wedding, and you know, it was, he's always the person I can call, you know, if I need something. Also, Sean Murphy, who's my head director, is a huge inspiration to me, on the field, in the auditorium, concert hall, whatever, but how he treats people, is incredible. How he understands the balance of the universe, and it's not fake, you know. It's not a fake smile, it's not a fake handshake and a hug, it's real. You know, he cares about people, he cares about students, he cares about relationships. And so to be able to work with someone like that, I don't wake up any day and not feel very blessed to have that. If it wasn't for him, I wouldn't be here right now.
Right. Wow, cool. Do you remember your first memorable DCI marching band WGI moment?
We'll go WGI. You know, DCI and marching band. You know, just kind of like anybody else, went to show, saw it, heard it. Oh my gosh, it's amazing. You know,
sure.
But WGI. I'd seen it. I'd been to live shows. I'd even been to Dayton. But like I said, when I felt like things really shifted in 2008, and by 2009, you could just see this difference in the activity. I just clearly remember finals in 2009 and sitting there, and you just saw the effects of what had happened in the years before it leading up to this point. And all of a sudden, the top five come on, and it's just insane. It was like Pulse was really had busted onto the scene at that point. They had the Breathe show.
Yep.
It was so well put together. Mystique was awesome. Mystique, you know, and then, I remember RCC came out with Totem, and I just still think any other year to this day, like, that would win. And I remember sitting there watching Totem and being just jaw on the floor, and the arena too, just the energy in the arena just like, yeah, this is incredible. And I remember sitting there, and I remember just look while they were playing, I remember looking at the curtain, the black curtain behind, and going, how is there still another group back there? You know, how is there something
quote unquote better
that's supposed to come out? I'm like, I feel bad for Rhythm X tonight, man.
Yeah.
Like, RCC's got this. And Rhythm X came out with Touch, and it was better, you know?
Right.
And oh my gosh, you know, it was just that idea of, again, you get the best players in the world with the best designers in the world, and what that can do, you know, it's unstoppable. It's so fun to watch as it changes every year too. But that year, especially, like I said, just watching Touch, what that show did, on an intellectual music, everything level, was just incredible.
Can you describe the Richard Kearns style of design?
I try to be personal. I try to have something that I can get behind, in some way or another. Now, I've never been to prison, so I know you could look at some shows and go, how do you get, you know, inspired by that and make that personal, you know, but there's an underlying message there, you know, that, we can all be better. So, but I guess, you know, I do want to be around shows that, that I like. You know, I want to listen to music that I'm going to enjoy throughout the season. And so I think that that lends itself to create emotional products. And I don't feel like it has to be that way. I've never set out to try and make this emotional thing be over the top or anything like that, you know? And that's why I do try and make sure that our designs are different every year, you know, and take them in a totally different way, even though they seem to have an underlying tone that might still resemble the identity of a group.
So what's next for Richard Kearns? What's coming up? What's going on, man?
Baby in like 3 weeks.
3 weeks? Oh, my God. Good thing there's nothing else going on competitively in pageantry right now.
Nope. But we're excited about that. I mean, it is definitely at a point where I want to make sure family is first. Mm-hmm, you know, I'm really fortunate of the doors that have opened up in the last number of years of getting to judge in different ways and places, getting to design for multiple groups. I love the groups that I'm getting to design with and where they're at.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm still looking for that stillness. I'm still looking for that balance. I feel like if there's one thing I'm more proud of than anything of where I was maybe a few years ago versus now, it's still just understanding that balance and getting closer to the priorities.
Is there anything you want to plug?
Under Armour and Whataburger. Let's do this. Get in touch. Burleson Centennial and Richard Kearns. We can team up and we can do this. So
the Richard Kearns breakfast combo, perhaps. You know what? Maybe you can help them redo their coffee.
Yeah. How do you clean a drum line? You get the mop water and you go.
Well, you can't make sure you don't take any Whataburger insignias on any designs to BOA because they will make you remove that. But that's another story for another time. Richard, it has been a pleasure to have you in Burleson. Thank you for driving all the way to Burleson. You are an absolute delight. In the future, I hope that you will consider providing everyone in UD Arena with a box of tissues.
Oh, thank you.
This episode of Sketchbook Podcast is hosted by, edited by, and produced by me, Daniel Montoya Jr. in Burleson, Texas. Our logo is created by John Suh of Purpose Designs, and our music is provided by Epidemic Sound. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at SketchbookPod. And to send us questions, comments, suggestions, or concerns, email us at sketchbookpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. And as always, I'm a veteran and a diabetic. Applebee's has rats. I found a whole rat in my Cobb salad.